Okay, good evening, everybody. It's 7:31. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from Gelfman Synagogue and our School of Jewish Studies here in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's Tanakh Tuesdays, and we're continuing our study of Melachim Aleph, 1 Kings, chapter 11. And you know what? I think that with God's help tonight, we might be able to conclude the chapter. We're basically on verse 36, and there's only six to go. Now, I realize the way we do things around here is like pulling teeth. It goes really slowly. But we might be able to make some headway and maybe be able to complete the chapter. So let's try to do that. Before we do, we'll do a little bit of review. We'll bring everybody in, and I'm going to read the preceding two or three verses to give us the context. And it's basically the Almighty talking to Yerubbaal through the prophet. Prophet Ahiya Hashiloni. I'll read you, take a minute. In the English, we'll keep it in English. Yerubbaal was a mighty man. We saw that in verse 28. And Solomon appointed him in charge of all the burdens of the house of Joseph. Very good. Excuse me. So verse 29. And it came to be, at that time, when Yerubbaal left Jerusalem, that Ahiah the Shilonite, the prophet, found him on the way, and he was wearing a new garment, and the two of them were alone in the field. Verse 30, and Ahiah grasped the new garment that was upon him and tore it into 12 pieces. He tore his own garment. 31, and he said to Yerubbaal, take for yourself 10 pieces, for so as God, the God of Israel, said, quote, I shall tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hands, and I shall give you the 10 tribes. Now watch that, interesting language. I'm going to tear away the kingdom, Miyad Shlomo, from the hands of Shlomo, and I'm going to give you the 10 tribes. Just remember, bank those words, I'm going to tear the kingdom out of his hands. I'm going to tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hands. And I'm going to put myself a big question mark next to that. You'll see why in a minute. Verse 32. But he will have one tribe. God talking through the prophet to Yerubbaal about Solomon, but he, Solomon, will have one tribe, the tribe of Judah, Benjamin, going to be combined and considered one tribe. We'll see that in a moment. But he will have one tribe for my servant David's sake and for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I have chosen of all the tribes of Israel. That's verse 32. We did that last week or 2 weeks ago. Verse 33. Why is God going to do this? 33, since they have deserted me and they have prostrated themselves to Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, to Chemosh, the god of Moab, Milcom, the god of the children of Ammon, and they have not walked in my ways, says God, to do what is right in my eyes, to keep my statutes and judgments, as did David, his father. So I'm gonna let Solomon have it, because he did not behave right. He allowed his wives to worship these various gods and their idols, and that's not good. So I'm going to have to punish him. But I'm going to cut him a break out of my love for his father David. And there you go, for verse 34. Here is God continuing through the prophet. However, I will not take any part of the kingdom away from him, but I'll make him a king all the days of his life. And that is where I want you to put some attention. Here Hashem says to the prophet, but you know what? I'm not going to remove anything from him all the days of his life. I'm amazed. In verse 31, it says, I shall tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hand. Three psukim later, God says, however, I will not take any part of the kingdom away from him, but I'll make him a king all the days of his life. See, he'll remain a king of Israel all the days of his life, and nothing will be taken out of his hand. You only take something out of somebody's hand if the person's alive. Then you're taking it out of his hand. But if he's dead, you're not taking anything out of his hand. He's gone. And there's a famous rabbinical idea. And I heard it this morning in Rabbi Krohn's tape on jealousy. And it's said over here too, that when David lives, he lives. And when he passes, that's when it goes to Solomon. There's no overlapping. There's no at the same time, they have two kings. So David and Solomon ruling at the same time. That's not how it works. In the divine spheres, there's David, he's king until he's not. Then Solomon takes over. He's king until he's not. And then Rehoboam takes over. And then you get the idea. So over here, when the pasuk says, I'm going to rip it out of his hands, what's shot with that? Because three pasukim later, it doesn't say that at all. On the contrary, see verse 34. I'm not going to take anything out of his hand. How do you tear the kingdom out of his hands if he's dead? I'm not going to take anything out of his hands the whole time he's alive. He'll be the king as long as he's alive. So you're not ripping anything out of his hands. I'm not sure I'm getting that, but I just wanted to bring that to your attention. See above verse 31. Okay, as long as we make comments on the margins, so we'll be able to go back to it. God is going to say, did you learn anything? And I'll say, I tried. He'll say, what did you learn? It's not much. He'll say, yeah, okay, tell me about the shiur you gave. And I'll say, yeah, we didn't just read it. We didn't just, you know, daven up the psukim. We tried our best. We grappled with it. And God will say, that's all I could ask from a minor leaguer like you, Plotzker, that you grappled, you tried. You tried to make contact with the ball. You tried to eke out an infield hit. So here we go. 34, we're reading the English. However, I won't take any part of the kingdom away from him, but I'll make him a king all the days of his life for the sake of David, my servant, whom I chose. For he, meaning David, kept my commandments and my statutes. Very good. So that's 34. And now 35. And 35 is where we left off. So let's just read it. 35 in the English. However, I will take the kingdom away from his son, and I'll give it to you, the 10 tribes. And, of course, that is going to happen. Solomon remains king over all the nation, over all Klal Yisrael. There's not yet a division called Israel and Yehuda. We don't have that division of Israel and Judah yet. We have one big nation. They live in the land of Israel. They're known as the nation of Israel. And you are the king over all of the nation and land of Israel. And yeah, that's my understanding. And then once Solomon passes, then Rehoboam is going to take over in Judah Binyamin. And you, Yeravam, he's being informed, you, Yeravam, you will take over the other 10 tribes, and that will be called Israel. Barry, go.
No, I was kind of cluing in from the idea that when a person leads over something, their legacy, that's really from them, that the kingdom was David's kingdom. Just because it's his son, that's still David's kingdom. The kingdom of the son doesn't start to his son. That's not really, so he really is wrenching it away from him, but he's not seeing it because he's still an extension of David.
This is important. Let me just see if I understand you. I'm going to try to repeat that in my own words and see if I got it. David is the king. He's over the kingdom. Then it's given over to Solomon, and he's the king. And you're saying that whatever, let me see if what you're saying, and then Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, he takes over. He's taking over Judah Binyamin, by the way, and only that. And that's going to be considered, in your opinion, is what you're saying, that's going to be considered an extension of David's kingdom and Solomon's kingdom. Is that what you were saying?
No, I'm saying that Solomon, his kingdom is reflected by his son.
Solomon's kingdom is going to be reflected
from his, what he accomplished is shown in his son. His son represents the continuation. David's continuation with Solomon.
Right.
Solomon essentially was ripped away, but the whole time that Solomon sat as king, it was only setting in David's place. It wasn't really his kingdom. It really was David's kingdom. Solomon's kingdom is reflected by himself.
Solomon's kingdom was a reflection of David and David's kingdom and David's legacy.
Right.
And Rehoboam, are you saying that Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, is going to be a reflection of Solomon's kingdom?
Yeah, that's the way I see it.
That's the way you see it. Okay.
And there's some indication to that because of the way that it was given to Solomon to begin with. The long lived David. And so that's not just my opinion. That They need Rabbi Berlov notes.
Okay. Rabbi Berlov is coming in a little bit. We got to let him warm up to the But okay, interesting idea. But I just want to just point out that it seems to me Rechavam, who will inherit Judah Binyamin, considered one tribe, obviously two, but in the Lushan of the Nach over here, it's going to be called one tribe. Judah Binyamin, they're going to work together, and they're going to stay together forever. That's going to, in your opinion, that's going to be some sort of reflection upon Solomon's kingdom, which had been over all the tribes and which had maintained a legacy of peace over all Israel from top to bottom, north to south. I mean, all the tribes were there, and they were under Solomon. Rechavam's going to have a mere little, like a sliver of that, only two tribes at most, Judah Binyamin. And you want to argue that even so, you want to taina that even so, Rechavam's kingship, his kingdom, is going to be a reflection of Solomon's kingdom, even though it's going to be a fraction of it.
Yes, it's a reflection of Solomon. And what a person accomplishes, we look towards the end of what they accomplished, not what they started with. So Solomon didn't start that kingdom. That was a reflection of David. So whatever Solomon ruled over, that was David's kingdom, and he was extending that. Whatever Solomon's son was ruling over, that was Solomon's kingdom and what was reflected of it.
I see. At the very end of Solomon's life, it's going to be that all Rechavam is going to inherit. He'll be the king of Judah over these two tribes. And Barry wants to argue that Solomon lived a life, and at the very end of it, he seemed to have failed and didn't seem to. I mean, like it's pretty clear. If you're not stopping your wives from all the idolatry, and the Almighty gets upset and sends a Navi and wrenches 10 tribes away from the Solomonic legacy and gives it over to Yerovam, and see what he's going to do in a chapter. You won't believe it. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So it's Rechavam's little kingdom is going to be, and according to Barry, is going to be a reflection of Solomon's failed efforts at the end of his life. He should have done better. He should have rebuked his wives. He should have wiped out idolatry. He didn't do all that. And that's going to all be reflected in the new kingdom of Rechavam, which is going to be a very small, small little kingdom. And
his total efforts, not you could say his failed efforts, but I think his total efforts accomplished that.
Actually, considering that Shlomo started out pretty strong, got rid of the enemies he needed to get rid of, built his temple, built his own palace, and then he went ahead and married the Egyptian woman. And for many of the rabbis and commentators, that's when everything started to really fall apart. In the fourth year of his reign, this was not a good thing. And he did all kinds of, according to Rashi earlier, a couple of weeks ago, we saw Rashi and Gemara and Sanhedrin. People were upset at the way he was trying to honor his wife. He was hurting the pilgrims here and the pilgrims there. And he you got to see the Mefarshim over there. Just a few psukim prior, mostly, you see it on page 128 in the Judaica, and that's a reflection on verse 27 earlier on, because he built the Milo, and he aggravated the Oli Regel, and all kinds of pshetlach as to how he did that, why he did that, how he did it several ways. Why did he do it? According to Rashi and Sanhedrin, it was all the same reason. Solomon was trying to uplift his wife, the Bas Paro, and this was not how the people liked it, didn't appreciate that. At all events, please see verse 27. And I think we're going to circle back to that in a minute, because it's going to be really interesting to see that. Those, welcome to the Brulovs. I just wanted to point out, before you came in, I noticed something I think a little bit difficult. You take a look at verse 31 in English. We're going to just quickly review. The prophet says to Yerovam, take for yourself 10 pieces of this Achia Shiloni, the Navi, ripped up his garment into 12 pieces. And he tells Yerovam, take 10 pieces, because this is what God says. I shall tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hands, and I'm going to give you, Yerovam, 10 tribes. I'll leave him with one tribe. Of course, it means two, Yehud and Binyamin, but for the sake of how we're expressing ourselves, it's going to be one big tribe, Judah, Benjamin. Okay. And 10 tribes. But just, Ms. Bro, I just want to point out the problem, and then I'll take any question or concern you have, but I'm on a roll. I just want to remember it. I shall tear the kingdom out of Shlomo's hands. That's 31. Kikom Hashem, Hinni Korea Esamamlacha Miyad Shlomo. I'm going to tear away the kingdom from the hand, literally from the hand of Solomon. And yet, three psukim later, in 34, what does it say? However, I won't take any part of the kingdom away from him. I'll let him be a king all days of his life. And I just thought that there is some inconsistency there between saying something like, I'm going to rip away the kingdom out of Shlomo's hands, and you only do that if you're alive, because out of a dead person you don't say you're ripping it out of his hands. He's gone. So only if he's alive would it be relevant to use the lashon, I'm going to rip away the kingdom out of his hands. But then three psukim later, Hashem says, I'm not going to take any part of the kingdom away from him. I'll let him stay king all the days of his life. For the sake of David, my servant, but I find that very peculiar. It seems to me a shtickle stira, and it's within three psukim, and the Navi is talking, and I don't have pshat in how to understand. I'm going to take away the kingdom from his hand. I'm not going to take away the kingdom from his hand. I don't understand how to figure that out. My brother's going to figure it out for me. Thank God you're here.
I don't think that at that level there's any question. It's just an idea that these several psukim to be developed. Anybody who communicates a message which has any content at all beyond a simple statement takes however long it takes to develop the idea. You begin with perhaps either an introduction or a topic sentence, and then you develop it and you explain how it's going to work, when it's going to work. So here's a topic sentence that is a Shlomo Aleph. I'm taking the kingdom away from Shlomo, because remember that the dynasties slowly continue indefinitely. I'm giving you the tenth Shabbat in. But then he continues to develop the idea into the particulars, into the sequence, and he clarifies it as we figure later that this is not going to occur immediately. But to me, looking at it as a normal literary narrative or normal human communication, as opposed to just putting a magnifying glass at every phrase and raising problems that perhaps are totally non-existent or artificial, it's not a problem at all.
I do. God is, you're saying, because Baruch Hu is introducing the idea, I'm going to eventually rip away from Shlomo's control the kingdom, and I'm going to give it to his son. He's going to get a small sliver of it. You're going to get the vast majority of it, but the Solomonic legacy of all 12 tribes in one unified nation, in peace and so on, I'm going to end that, and I'm going to divide this up. So Rabbi Brulov has a good approach. Be patient and let the prophet develop it and bring it out. And I'm feeling better already. Mrs. Brulov, you wanted to say something too, please.
On this point, I was going to say that tearing it out of Solomon's hand is out of his kingdom through his son, his son being the extension. And the other thing I was going to say is I had a new thought in terms of what's it mean, I will give him one tribe that's in addition to his own. He's got his own tribe. And I'll give him one more.
That's nice. That's actually a very nice thought, because we understand, don't we, that Yehuda is going to stick through thick and thin with a Judah man. They'll stick with David. They'll stick with Shlomo. They're going to stick with Rechavam. They're going to stick with a Judah man. But Mrs. Brulov is saying, what does the Navi mean by saying I'm going to give you a tribe? It means I'm going to give you an additional tribe. Yehuda will not be alone. Judah is going to be joined with Binyamin. And I like that. I think it's very, very sweet, and it could work for me. We've seen much more fantastical pshetlach running around in our lives, and that is certainly, and I got to confess that I'm not the greatest Talmudist, but when you study Gemara nonstop, you just take a magnifying lens. I use elephants like a microscope, and you just focus in on a word, a letter, and before you know it, you got problems. When sometimes all you need to do is just kind of be patient, step back, take a breath, and let the verses breathe a little bit. And sometimes things will be clarified and they'll be settled. But my head is going, oh, no, I got a microscope going on. How does that stem with this? And I'm sure I'm getting applauded somewhere up in heaven. Meanwhile, they're also going, why don't you just read like a normal person reads, you know, a piece of literature? Okay, so I like all these chapters. It's very, very good. Now we're going to continue. Fresh material, fresh stuff, fresh meat. Here we go. We are going to just read 35. We did it last week in the English. Then we're going to do 36, and that's new. 36 is new.
December, I'm looking now at the verse 7 of recent times, the Pesukim just leading up to it. So it's a conclusion which seems very sovereign, that the view of the Tanakh, which is, of course, Ruach HaKodesh, is that Shlomo, we had to summarize Shlomo's Malchus, the golden age we all look back to, and summarize it in terms of morally, it was a moral failure. I don't think he says anywhere here that the one tribe that what Shlomo and his descendants will keep is because of any zechus of Shlomo, right? It's only the zechus of David and other reasons, not the zechus of Shlomo. So it looks like, notwithstanding the great moral questions that we spent so much time on with David HaMelech, David HaMelech is assessed as a tzaddik compared to his son Shlomo, the great King Shlomo, which is usually seen as the golden age, the builder that they said made.
Yes. Yes, I think that you're making a great point. David HaMelech is this lodestar that God keeps on referring to. Laman David Abdi. Asher Bacharti Yosel, that's in 34. Asher Shamar Mitzvosai B'chukosai. He's the one who kept my commandments and ordinances. Wow. And it's not the only time he says it. He says it again. And we're going to see it right now in 36.
And he also seems to indicate that, you know, that the temple and stuff was built by David's strength. I mean, you know, some of them might put the bricks together. But it said very clearly that the only reason he's giving this extra tribe is because that the Temple Mount was there, and he wanted to keep that all connected together. He didn't want to split that up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clear that that is David's merit, and it has nothing to do with Shlomo.
We're going to see more of that idea, David's merit, not Solomon's merit, in a moment. But I just want to read 35. We did it last week. I'll do it in English to give everybody a little bit more context. We've been reading from verses 27, 28 up until now. Now we're at 35. It says, the Navi, however, in God's name, however, I will take the kingdom away from his son and will give it to you, the 10 tribes. After all, this is the Navi talking to Yeravam. I'm going to take away the kingdom from his son, from Rehoboam, and I'm going to give you, Yeravam, we got to keep these names straight, the 10 tribes. Now we can begin fresh meat. We're at 36, Lamed Vav. Vilivno, and to his son, referring to Rehoboam, Etain Shevet Echad, I'm going to give one tribe. Mrs. Berlov, her shot is nice. That tribe is an additional tribe, not one equals two, two equals one. I mean, any kid knows that. Two equals doesn't equal one. But I'm going to give you an additional tribe. It's called Binyamin. He's going to have another tribe. The Livno Etain Shevet Echad, the man Heos near the David Avdi. Kol Yamim, Lifanai, Birushalayim. Hayir Shebachati Li Lasum Shemisha. Difficult to kind of stop as I'm on a roll. And to his son, I'm going to give one tribe. Laman Heos near, so it should be, and they're going to translate, commentators will translate that it means a malchus. This should be a kingdom. Laman, so that, in order that, heyos, near, there should be a near meaning a kingdom, an old, we're going to see that in a second, like a rulership, a yoke, ledavid avdi, for David my servant. It's going to be for David, the grandfather, David the Zeta, he's still going to be honored by virtue of what I'm going to do to his grandson. I'm going to give him a small kingdom, but I'm even doing that, it seems. I'm doing that only in order to honor David, who I love. Why did I love David so much? Kol hayamim? David avdi kol hayamim lefanai Yerushalayim. It's going to be all the days. You have a kingdom before me in Yerushalayim. Kol hayamim. All days, lefanai birushalayim, or I guess all the days that his son's going to be alive is how I would, if I have to massage those words and translate it, I would say, personally, at first read, I would say, I'm going to create this kingdom in honor of David, my servant. Kol hayamim, it'll be for all the days, we have to figure that out, what does that mean? Lefanai birushalayim, it's going to be, this kingdom is going to be before me, it's going to be in Jerusalem, in the city. Yerushalayim is ha'ir, the city of Shebacharti li, which I have chosen for my own sake, lasum shmi sham. And that phrase comes up so much, so often. Lasum shmi sham. So that I shall place my name there, in the city in which I have chosen to place my name. See also an echo of that back in Devarim. The Moshe is always saying that. Rabbi Balk is always darshaning that as well. Lasum shmi sham, l'shakin shmo sham. Always that Lashon comes up, and that city was ultimately Yerushalayim, where Hashem's presence was. Why is God going to do all this? Going to do it for the sake of David, because David kept my mitzvahs. We saw that a moment ago, above in verse 34. And I'm picking this young man, he's the grandson, out of respect for his grandfather, who served me so well with such distinction, and he's going to be in Yerushalayim. You're going to be elsewhere, but he's going to be in Yerushalayim. Barry?
I just wanted to get some clarity from between the lines. One aspect was what Revison said, that, you know, like he gained this other kingdom, but we usually do not consider somebody that rules over their family. They might be a chief, but they're not really a king. So if Yehuda's really his family, you can't be a family, you can't rule over your family as a king. You can rule over a family, but that's not necessarily a king. The other aspect is he seems like he lost his worship, because we discussed other places that he was like kind of like possessed. He didn't even rule over his own body. They said that this Dybbuk came in and took over, and all this stuff, he lost control over even his own thought process.
Solomon?
Yeah. Wasn't Ashkelon?
I don't know if you see that scripturally. Maybe there's some midrashim about that.
No, it seems like wasn't that named Ashkelon or some other?
Oh, you're talking about the demon?
Yeah,
a midrashic?
Yeah.
Ashmedai?
Yeah.
Ashmedai. Yeah. I wish I had more information at the moment. I was just preparing scripture. You're asking me to also prepare all the midrashim and Ashmedai. I could do that. Maybe I got to take out one of those kiddie books in the No Tanakh series. And there is some talk about that. But, and you make a good point, but I'm not, I don't have enough info on the Ashkelon.
No,
but the Jewish press used to run those.
It's sort of like between the lines that he wasn't even in control of himself.
He wasn't controlling his wives and his palace the way he should have feared the belt all days. He was really falling down. It was an epic fail over there, unfortunately, and it really got to God. You can't allow these women to revert back to their idolatry and not say a word to them. You gotta be able to rebuke them. And don't depend upon your children to do that thing. You got to sit down with the wives and say, honey, one at a time, honey, all 700 of them, okay? All 700 of these women. You got to take a time out and say, sweetie, we can't be worshiping Kamosh now anymore, okay, because I thought that you converted. I mean, and stuff like that, but nicely. Nicely. And he apparently didn't do it. And I'm not sitting in judgment of him. God already did that. But I'm just reading it. It's just like, how do you not do it? How are you, what are you doing the whole day? I mean, how are you, what are you ruling over? You go to court, you come back, you judge the people, I get it. Then you come home, and you're smelling the sacrifices, the Kamosh and the Baal and their Ashtoreth. And you don't say anything. Day in and day out, 700 women doing stuff like that, and nobody says a word, and not even the king? This is weird.
It's not going
That's right.
Well, Judaica Press wasn't either. It totally leaves it out of the
And the word coal over here is going to constantly come up in its normal translation, meaning everything. But kol, kol hayamim. You're right, they do leave out that phrase. I was looking for how they were going to treat it, and I was going to try to comment on it, but they leave it out. And that's the amazing thing to do. Kol hayamim is not not even, I mean, it's just not translated, and that's weird. Note that in previous 34, below a kachas kol hamamlocha miyado, and the mefarshim were going gaga over that. What does that mean? I'm not going to take the whole mamlocha from him. I'm not going to take the whole kingdom from him. No, what the mefarshim say is, I'm not going to take anything from him. Okay. So this phrase kol suddenly has a little bit of a different meaning. I'm not going to take a sliver, a bit. I'm not going to take any of his kingdom away from him. And there are, and Rashi comes to explain how that phrase kol can mean, you know, something else entirely. It doesn't just mean everything. It means rather, you know, even a little bit. Shum davar. Take a look at Radak. V'loa kakas kol hamamlocha. I'm not going to take the whole kingdom. What does God mean by that? Means I'm not v'loa kakas shum davar min hamamlocha. Loa kach miyado. I'm not going to take a little bit. I'm not going to take anything from his kingdom. And then, three psukim later, when you see the word kol, now it's reverting back to the usual translation, meaning everything. Kol hayamim. And it's not the only time you're going to see that. As kol asher atzavecha, in the next pasuk, you're going to see kol b'chol asher ta'aveh. The word kol comes back in its normal translation and function. But in 34, we are almost forced to say kol means something else entirely. Interesting word, this word kol. I'll take any thoughts if you want to jump in, and we'll keep going.
I think kol always refers to a set in a complete picture. If you're not going to take all of it, you're saying, okay, am I trying to interpret that? I'm not going to take the whole set away, or I'm not. But if you take a piece of a set away, then it no longer is the whole set. So you could interpret it, you know, back and forth that way.
I have. Okay, it's good.
Well,
yes.
As you stop short of the Radak's examples, Radak shows very clearly the word call means any. It doesn't mean to me all. It means any. You have to. There are many words like that. I think that's the English word yet. It can mean you haven't done it yet.
Uh-huh.
It could mean yet as an interjection. It could mean nevertheless, right? Or still, I've still done it, or I haven't done it. You know, I think there are a lot of these words that can go in more than one context, depending on the usage. Yeah.
You're right. I should not have really stopped where I stopped. We should have continued on. With the Radak, quite right, Radak supports his contention. V'chein lo sa'asa kol malacha. You shall not do, and we translate that, any work. It doesn't mean v'chein lo sa'asa kol malacha, you shall not do all work. It means you shall not do anything, not even a little smidgen's work. Don't do even a little bit of malacha. Kol chelu v'chol dam lo sochelu. When it says all fats and all dam you shall not eat, it means not even a little bit of fat, not even a little bit of blood may you eat. And there are similar examples to that as well. And that's the Radak in his totality. So, Yeshikarach, and thank you for making me read the whole thing. That's only right. Okay, very good. We're trying our best over here to break this apart. I'm going to give his son one try, so that David, my servant, may have a kingdom before me in Jerusalem, the city which I chose for myself to place my name there. That's the English translation. And when you read it like that, you get some sort of flavor and you get a little bit of context and flow. It flows good. And again, it's always coming back to David, constantly. 33, David, his father. David, my servant. David, my servant. David, my servant, 33, 34, 36. It really is an amazing thing. That David is constantly coming up over here, and he is the one that the Almighty is doing stuff in his memory. Take a look at the footnotes. Please find it on page 130 at the bottom. You got to move over. Turn over a page, please. Left-hand side, if you will. Bottom, right-hand side of page 130 on the bottom. David, my servant, David Avdi, that one of his descendants occupy the throne. I want that to happen. I promised it, and I'm going to fulfill it. David's, the Davidic lineage is going to maintain itself on the throne. On David's throne will sit a child of David. That's what I want. That's what's going to be. That's the Mitzvah. What is the word near? That's an interesting word. The word Hayos near the David Abdi. There should be a near for David, my servant. What's the word mean? Near, the Hebrew, quoting a lot, a kingdom, says Rashi, there was a, let me just, okay, what's this one second? Near, Bechiri Kimobitzer, I guess the Radak, Rashi, near, Memshala, Venir, Lashon, Ol, kingship, a kingdom, a rulership, and the word near is a Lashon of Ol, of a yoke, of a burden. It has to be a yoke or a burden upon the people. There's the kingdom. Near is an expression of a yoke. Rashi quoted in the Targum Yonason, see the Radak, your Sabkara. Just as the oxen who are under the yoke must obey their driver, so must the subjects obey their king. And that's the pshat. I'm going to install a king. He imposes a yoke upon the people. People have to follow their king, and that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a yoke, a burden upon the people in Judah, Benjamin. It's going to be put there by their new king, Rehoboam, grandson of David. Others explain near like the word nail, a candle, following the Radak. Just like a candle sheds light, so does a king shed his influence on his subjects. I like that. And see, that's the Mitzvah. Okay. So that's 36.
Okay, the one that everyone's near to the yoke.
For some, near follows a Lashon Ol, says Rashi.
Yeah, so how does that work in the
poetry? Uh-huh. Leman Heos near the David Avdi. So there should be a yoke, a burden. L'David Avdi, I'm going to have to translate in memory of, in honor of, for the sake of L'David Avdi, for to or for the sake of David, my servant. I'm going to install a kingdom. A kingdom is a yoke. It is a burden upon the people, and I'm going to do that in honor of, in memory of, for the sake of David, my servant. Because I promised David that he's going to have his children sitting on his throne forever. So I'm going to keep my word. I'm going to install his grandson. He's going to put a yoke, kingdom upon the people, and it's going to be of the Davidic lineage, and I'm going to thereby keep my word. That's what I got at the moment. Please answer.
I know you're right. I'm just suggesting something as a rabbi, and you may be called upon at some future time to introduce a new leader, to introduce, particularly, let's say, a son who's succeeding a father or student who's succeeding a rabbi. And one can write on this posuk and say that the descendants are to be a nair, meaning it could be the yoke or it could be the candle. And each of them has a whole set of things that are connotated by the whichever the two translations you take. So that could be fuel for a beautiful drasha of introducing somebody or praising somebody's testimonial, how that person could serve both as a light as well as a yoke. You know, so that could. But isn't there another word, though, another meaning? What does it mean, niru, near, route his ruel kotsu? I don't remember where that kotsu comes from, tanach.
I
thought it meant to plow a furrow. Something about.
If so, that doesn't seem to be anybody. Nobody seems to be
there.
Yeah. That shot.
No.
That's an interesting thought. I didn't have it in front of me. Nobody seems to follow that. See, there's an old, Rashi goes in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Others go in the direction of the actual word, near. Near equals near, which I like. But as far as plowing, possible, but I'm not seeing it here.
You don't have any dictionaries in this
room? Not over here. Nothing to know.
Okay.
Nothing
to
know.
Sorry.
Okay. Where are we? 37? Wow. Like Mrs. Burl, I'd like to say, we're flying. Just flying through the scripture over here, 37. And this is a very long, pretty long monologue over here by the prophet. It goes on. The Oscha and you, Ekach, I will take, Umalachta, Becholoshetta Aven Avshecha. I shall take you, and you shall rule over all your soul desires. Yisamelech al Yisrael. Again, this is the Navi talking to Yeravam ben Nevat. Yeravam's going to be the man in charge of the other 10 tribes. And the prophet saying to him, Voscha, and you, as far as you go, Yeravam, Ekach, I'm going to take you, Umalachta, you will rule, Bechol Asher Taaveh Nafshecha, over all that your heart or your soul desires. And it's, of course, going to be the typical rabbinical or musari drush over those words. I'm sure you know where I'm going already. I mean, especially around this time of the year, everybody hocks it. B'chol asher taaveh nafshecha, over everything that your soul desires, you're going to be the ruler. I'm sure you see where I'm going. V'yisa melech al Yisrael. You're going to be the king over Israel. And the other man, Rechavim, is going to be the king over what's going to be called Yehuda. We don't see that word over here. We don't see that phrase. But you, Yerubim, you're going to be the king over Israel, the 10 tribes of Israel. Okay, now let's go see what it means when it says, it's kol asher taaveh nafshecha. You're going to rule over all that your heart desires. Take a look. And I'm on 37, the footnote over there on the bottom of 130. And you shall rule over all that your heart desires, your soul desires. And it's going to be quoting the Malbim and the Derech Musar. If you rule over what your heart desires, if you're going to rule over that which your soul desires, then, then Vayisa Melech HaYisrael. Then you're going to be worthy to be the king over Israel. And the Malbim says, they quote him here, if somebody rules over his own desires and subordinates them to his intellect, only then is he fit to rule over others. So true. That's the classic normative Jewish way. Can't be a leader and a ruler unless you're a mensch. I mean, obviously people take over and they do stuff, but to be looked upon as a model, as a role model for Klal Yisrael, you have to be somebody who's in charge of your own life. Got to be in charge of your own tivus. Can't be led by your tivus. You got to be in charge of them. And that's taka ruler in Israel. Anything else is a sham. So over here, that's the musari drush. If you're going to rule over that which your heart desires, then you're going to be able to be worthy to rule over Israel. That's the musar for it. I like it. I think it works. Mamash Oiska Hoffman, the words like that. Mrs. Brewer?
Right. That's the downfall of Shlomo HaMelech.
Yes.
Yes. That's where you see the downfall. It's got to be taken away. Obviously, I mean, his life was at the end anyway. I don't know those things. But at the end, when you're just allowing idol worship to go on, you got to appreciate this. I mean, I don't even know if we do. Because I'm kind of, I'm chirping like a little bird. Oh, the women, they were worshiping idols and doing sacrifices. Try to imagine what that might have looked like. King Solomon, wisest man, writes 3 Sifrei Tanakh. Try to appreciate, judging Klal Yisrael, wisest man who ever lived, understands the birds. And he comes home, and these women are on their knees to the Baal, and the Ashtoreth, and the smoke is rising, and they're worshiping idols, and he doesn't say a word? And this is in Jerusalem? I'm not talking about Ashtod, some kind of Amaleki town or Plishtim town. I mean, no, even that would have been horrific. But in the city of Jerusalem, this is David's holy city. What are you doing? I don't get it. And God says, enough's enough. I got to take this away from you. So if you worship and if you subordinate your evil inclination, then you could be a taka ruler over others. Very good. Take a look and see. Lamed Ches 38. Bahaya, it will be. Im tishmas kol asher atzavecha. If you will listen to all, there's that word chol again, and over here it's a normal understanding, everything which I command, v'alachta b'drachai, you will go, and if you will go in my ways, v'achisa yosha b'enai, and you will do that which is straight and good, you follow the straight and narrow path, lishmor chukosai u'mitzvosai, to observe my chukim and my mitzvos, laws that have an explanation, laws that don't, my commandments, you must follow these. Kasher Asa, again, the magic man, David Avdi. How many times are we going to see that? Hashem constantly referring to King David. There was a man who kept my words. If you'll do the same thing as David did, and this is actually, he's talking to Yeravam. He's not talking to the grandson of David. He's talking to Yeravam. If you'll follow my man David, he kept everything. He kept my mitzvahs. He kept my chukim. He listened to me. V'yisi imach, I will be with you. Uvanisi Yeravam, I'm going to be with you. Uvanisi lecha bayis ne'eman, I'm going to build for you a bayis ne'eman, literally a trustworthy house. Now, some mafarshim are going to say an eternal house. Others are going to look at that and say, absolutely not. What do you mean an eternal house? What do you mean? It's got to be David's children. That establishes an eternal house. What does this bayis ne'eman even mean? How do you understand that phrase? A trustworthy house. A long-standing house, maybe. Going to have to massage that phrase. I'm going to build for you a bayis ne'eman. I'll call it a trustworthy house. Kasher banisi l'David, just like I built for David. V'nasati l'cha es Yisrael, I will give you Israel. And you'll be in charge over there of those people. And there's David again coming up for a second time. And of course, 39. Ba'anazera David. David is just nonstop. Invoked here constantly. See the footnotes on 38. There's anything to say? We'll try to say it. Bottom of page 130 on the right-hand side. Very, very bottom. Says 38, if you heed, if you listen to all that I shall now, you got to skip the Ralbag. Now, there's a massive Ralbag. I didn't get a chance to prepare. And I'm not sure that I will. But it's just amazingly long. And maybe it's worthy of our attention. I'm sure it is. But man, there's a lot there. Okay? And if you'll heed all that I shall command you, I'm on page 133. As regards the conducting of the kingdom and its wars, says the Kliyoker. If you'll behave like a king has to behave, regarding things that have to go down in the kingdom and the wars, do what you got to do. Not like Shaul, watch this, says the Malbim. Not like King Saul, who didn't annihilate the king of the Amalekites and their cattle, as he had been commanded, because he didn't understand the reason for the command. They didn't do it. Oh, I like, people talk me into the fatted calves. And I thought, yeah, why not? We'll offer up the good cows and the good lamb and the good lambs and sheep. We'll be fine. Why wouldn't God want that? So these animals are delicious. Shmuel's going, are you kidding? That's not what God wanted. God said, kill out everybody, man, woman, child, and the animals. What's the bleeding of the sheep that I hear? Why didn't you do that, Saul? And he had to have it wrenched away from him. Didn't keep the kingdom. As did my servant David, says the Malbim, because David obeyed me without questioning my commandments. That's how David conducted himself with God. Then you're going to have a bayis ne'eman. They want to translate over here a lasting dynasty. A lasting dynasty is how they're translating this. Following the Kliyoker, watch this. They have a shtuka machlok is going on over here. Kliyoker, your children and your grandchildren, this is talking to Yeravam now, new to be established king of Israel, your children and your grandchildren, watch this, will inherit the kingdom, as will the descendants of David inherit the kingdom of Judah. So your children will be able to sit on your throne, Yeravam, for a very long time, if you behave yourself. And you're going to establish a kingdom all your own. It's going to have longevity. I'm going to make it a bayis ne'eman. what, trustworthy house? A lasting dynasty, according to this translation. And according to the Yucca, that's what it means. The doctor says, you're going to have descendants. David will have descendants on the throne of Judah. Good. You're going to have descendants on the throne of Israel. Good. And that's how it's going to work. Others are going, that's not possible. See, the Ravid maintains that had the kings of Israel, had the kings of Yisrael, the 10 tribes, had they been righteous, then Yerubim's dynasty would have remained, watch this, permanently. Bayis Ne'eman, God says, a trustworthy house. And we get the idea, it's going to be for a very long time. According to the Ravid, it could have been going on forever had they behaved. It would have been remaining permanently as a dynasty. But the kings wound up ruling in a... Well, I'm sorry. Let me read that again in its totality. Ravid says that had the kings of Israel been righteous, Yerubim's dynasty would have remained permanently, but its kings would have ruled in a subordinate position to the Malchi Yehuda. They would have been on the throne of Yerubim for a very long time, but everybody would have known, yeah, that's great, they're the kings of Israel, but the real king is the king of Davidic lineage. David, Solomon, Rehoboam, and whoever takes over, those guys are the real kings of the nation. That's how I'm getting it, from the Ravid. They would have been a dynasty that would have remained permanently. But look at the Rambam, quoting over here from Hilchos Melachim. Rambam's view is that no dynasty but the Davidic dynasty was promised permanence. No way that Yerubim's children would have been able to establish a permanent line, according to the Rambam. Even if Yerubim had been very pious, he was not. But had he been, his dynasty would nevertheless have been terminated. It could not go on forever, according to the Rambam. He therefore, the Rambam, interprets this term, Bayis Ne'eman, which we keep on translating as a trustworthy house, because I like to try to keep it literal. How does the Rambam understand that phrase? That phrase, trustworthy house, means a kingdom to which all laws of kingdom apply. According to Rambam, here's how you render the pasuk. Bayis Ne'eman, a stable kingdom, a kingdom with some legs. It's got the ability to survive if you behave yourself. And here's the conditions. We just read it. You better behave. You don't question me. You keep the chukim. You keep the mitzvahs. You keep the mishpatim. You act like a mensch. You establish a kingdom and you act properly. And you do what a king's got to do. And you fight wars when I tell you to fight them. And you don't go off and gallivant around and ask the king of Aram for help. You don't do any of that, Mishagas. You follow me. And then you'll have some legs. The kingdom that you're going to establish will have something. It'll be somewhat stable. A kingdom that in its time, I'm continuing over here from the footnote, a stable kingdom, according to Rambam, that's a kingdom which in its time possesses the same stability as that of Yehuda. Wow. Its permanence or longevity are not promised. According to the Rambam, Hilchos Melachim, chapter 1, halacha 9, the permanence and or longevity, not promised. You make it happen by your good behavior. It's up to you, Yerubim, and your children following you. And that could be a stable kingdom if you behave and act in a Torah fashion. Barry.
Yeah. I'm just saying that the Rambam has a lot to rely on because all the different prophets are always saying to the kingdom to think, this kingdom is the substantiated one. This one is just a temporary kingdom. And that's repeated in many places. And in other places, there's also the aspect that as long as you're following Hashem's ways, that allows something that wouldn't be able to last on its own to extend its life. In other words, saying like, okay, there was a certain descendants joining that unless they learn all the time, they don't make it into their 30s and stuff. But if they're learning a lot, yeah. So we see this substantiated other places. So there, Rambam has lots to prove. He doesn't he's not on thin ground here. It's not just his opinion.
Correct. Barry, thank you. Okay, Bayis Nema for Rambam, a stable kingdom, it's all about you. You behave and you do what you got to do. It can last. It can potentially last. But don't think that the term Bayis Nema means a permanent setup. For the Rambam, it's not what that phrase means. It means a normala, stable kingdom that's going to depend upon you and your behavior and your Torah behavior to dictate how long it lasts. And no idolatry, please. That usually is a biggie. And you know what? I mean, like, I marvel at the way things went down back in the day. I mean, when we read in a chapter or two about Yeruvim, and I just heard a whole CD by Rabbi Krohn about jealousy, and he's going to be looking at Yeruvim, and I don't want to give away the house because, you know, we have to learn it and give it its due and all that. I don't want to skim over it and all that, but he's going to wind up setting up. Might as well tell you. Why not? Not a poker game. He's going to wind up, we all know this, he's going to wind up setting up like a rival temple of a sort. He's going to set up two golden calves. He's going to say, like, Eile Elohecha Yisrael. I'm mamish those words, or close to it. He's going to tell the people, this is like a tikkun for what was done back then, and all that. You don't have to go to Yerushalayim, who needs that? And should the people go to see Rechavim, the king? They're going to give their allegiance to him? Meanwhile, I want them to have their allegiance to me. So he sets up a temple, sets up golden calves, and he says to everybody, these are your gods, O Israel. These are your leaders, Israel, and I'm going myself. I've seen this movie before. It didn't work out good. Now, why are we repeating the same script? They'd never let that happen in Hollywood. If the first version tanked, you don't get a sequel. If you don't make money on the first one, you don't get, you know, round two. There's Rambo number six because the first five made money. Over here, this guy is going to be following in the wrong, and he's thinking he's going right, and it's unbelievable. And he quotes the famous Midrash, Yeruvim. Hashem says, listen, you're really, really misbehaving. But I'll let you do tshuva, and you and me and David will take a stroll in heaven. So remarkably, Yeruvim says, okay. But who's going to be in charge of that stroll? Who's going to be leading the pack? So Hashem says, well, of course, I lead the pack because I'm God. But then I got to tell you that David's going to be kind of leading. And you're going to be with us, but you're not going to be leading. I mean, it's me. And then comes David, and then comes you. But we're all going to be strolling together. But you get the idea? I'm going to be ahead, David, and then you. But we'll walk together. And your brother says, you know what? I think I'm going to just, like, pass on that opportunity. It's just unbelievable. Barry?
Well, first of all, pump and dump has been around quite a bunch of times. So this was a pump and dump. Pump and dump means that you take this stock and you build it up and make it sound like it's really great, and it goes way up, and then you get rid of it before it crashes.
Right.
So that this is a pump and dump thing. So it's not that history does. That didn't work before. We keep on doing the same thing because it has a time frame that it does work. And the other thing that you mentioned,
just spiritually doesn't seem to work. When God's upset at Klai Yisrael, lets him have it, then he's going to let him have it again. I mean, I don't know about the pump and dump.
I don't know. The Nazi Germany seemed to study all the different things and said, hey, you know, we'll be fine for a while. The general in Japan said, hey, you know, waking a sleeping job, but we'll do great for a while, but it isn't going to work in the long run. And yet that was enough to get people like, oh, they're short-sighted. They only look at a certain period of it, and hey, that seems to work for a while.
Well, I was thinking, like, the example I'm thinking of is a blood libel. How many times is a blood libel used? And most of the time it was disproven by the Goyim, the Pope or the Archbishop afterwards intervene and say it's nonsense and you can't punish the Jews for such a false thing. And yet Hitler, Yamashimo, he revived the blood libel as if all the history that disproved it didn't exist. He revived it, and I knew a person who was put in jail for blood libel. Tell you who, Norman Frankel's grandfather, Justin Frankel.
Wow, I did not know this.
In 36, he was thinking of leaving Germany. He had the opportunity to. He had people signed for him in his country, in his city. And he said, I'm that bad. I have a few years to retirement. And he's a teacher, principal, school, whatever. I'll get my pension. And within a year or so, he was put in prison with blood libel. And somehow, I think he had a friend at a high place. He got him out after 6 months. And he said, if such a thing, which was, was relegated to the most primitive parts of medieval history, can be operating today, that's it. And that's when he finally got out. Yeah.
I was frankly just not aware of blood libel revival by the Nazis. I did not know that. They were doing everything else. I guess why not that?
Right.
But I wasn't aware that they actually did that.
It isn't that late. It was late 30s, and not that late. I believe it was before Crystal Knot.
But they actually promulgated that the Jews are involved in blood life, blood work, blood usage.
The principle of the Jewish school.
That they were killing Christians and using the blood.
Yeah, exactly.
Nazis
that.
Made those claims.
Precisely
I
that.
I didn't know that. I thought, the Nazis were doing everything, but I didn't know that.
I heard of the case of bloodline in New York, probably like upstate New York, whereby the mayor of the town wondered about it. So he went to one of his friends that was Jewish, and he said to the guy that, wasn't really keeping anything, he said, is there any truth to these blood libel things? And the guy says, I don't know. I don't have any idea. So he took that to mean, you didn't want to say that. And the federal government had to step in and say,
when was this?
I have to look up.
The ballpark.
The ballpark. It was. It was in the early days where they had all these different things where they weren't really happy with the Jews and they.
There we go. I'm talking about
the paper that guy decided he was a Jew for a month or two and. And he put in the articles and stuff like that. It was some paper they didn't want to be very prejudiced, and they hired one writer, and the writer decided to pretend like he was Jewish for a while to see what reaction he was getting, and then he wrote an article about
it. It's not recent.
It's not real recent. No.
100 years?
Probably 100 years.
Between 1900 and 1920?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, I've never heard of this. Thank you. Well, friends, I could go on forever like this. I did prepare until the end of the chapter, but it's getting a little bit late. And there's a very, very long Rashi. People have things to do and food to cook, houses to clean. Shabbos is coming. Rosh Hashanah is coming. So I want to thank everybody for coming out. Here's the rub is that we're going to be off for a while over here because – Mondays and Tuesdays over the next several weeks are often taken up by Yom Tov or Erev Yom Tov. And so it seems that I think for every single Tuesday over the next at least minimally 2 or 3 weeks, we've got Rosh Hashanah, we've got Yom Kippur, we've got Sukkot, we've got Simchas Torah. I think we're up for 4 weeks. And we come back, God willing, believe it or not, at the very, very tail end of October. That'll be the first available Tuesday. That's going to be it's going to be October 29. I know this because Sunday, October 27, is our Daniel Pearl concert in Cedar Village. So 2 days later, we'll be able to return back to Malachim Aleph over here. And so please join us again. And you'll have ample opportunity to review the past 11 chapters and to go forward. Nobody's stopping us to go move forward if you want to read and learn up the next few chapters going forward. So enjoy, have a great week, a good Shabbos, the last Shabbos of the year, and have a very, very wonderful, healthy, happy New Year. Ekseva Chsima Tova to everybody, and Gezeirat Rosh Hashanah. Enjoy it, Yom Kippur, an easy, meaningful fast, and an enjoyable Sukkot. And God willing, we'll see everybody in a month on October 29th. Have a good one. Take care and be well. Bye-bye.